This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be about commercial injunctions. I am joined by Barrister Duncan McComb from Maitland Chambers in London. Duncan specialises in commercial litigation and arbitration, and he regularly appears in the Business and Property Courts of England and Wales, advising in various complex areas of commercial law, company law and insolvency, often involving urgent injunction applications. He is also particular expertise in proceedings involving states or state entities, having advised and represented nation states, state-owned bodies and those seeking to make claims against states. Thank you for joining me, Duncan.
Hi, Hattie. Thank you very much for having me, and thank you very much for this initiative, which I think is fantastic.
Thank you. It would be nice if I spoke a little bit clearer, wouldn't it? I just missed a word there, and I realised as I said that, but then I thought, no, just carry on.
I didn't notice, so...
Oh, good. Oh, God, if a barrister doesn't pick up on something, then you're really good. Okay, so, thank you very much for joining us. I think this is a really important area of law, given the fact that we're, you know, in a pandemic as well, where life after the 23rd of March in the UK, which was in 2020, the date of the lockdown really, just changed overnight for everybody. And I think that this area of law could possibly become a lot more busier than, it would have naturally played out as being.
Well, I suppose that may be right. I mean, injunctions often come up in very urgent situations, and when things are changing very, very quickly, that obviously creates all sorts of urgent situations. So you can imagine that it may well.
Yes. So commercial injunctions part one. Let's just explain to our listeners, what do we mean by a commercial injunction? Let's break that down, Duncan.
Well, I mean, I think firstly, injunction is a legal word, obviously, I'll explain what that is, and then commercial is more just a sort of a description that you and I have put on it, I think, really. But as far as an injunction is concerned, and what is an injunction, put most simply, really, it's a court order requiring someone to do something or not to do something. But that does somewhat oversimplify it, because not all court orders are injunctions. I mean, you wouldn't call, say, a procedural order requiring someone to put in witness statements by a certain date an injunction, and you wouldn't call an order to pay someone a sum of money an injunction. So I think the best way of thinking about it is that an injunction is an order which requires someone to do something or not to do something, but it's backed by the court's coercive power. So if someone breaches an injunction, for example, they can go to prison. They can have their assets for contempt of court for breaching the order. That wouldn't be the case with a procedural order, which would just have sort of procedural sanctions, and it wouldn't be the case with an order to pay money, where the sanction's really sort of bankruptcy, which is the same as any debt. So that's the important thing about an injunction, I think. It's backed by that court power. And as far as commercial injunctions are concerned, I think that's just a way of limiting the sort of injunctions we're talking about to injunctions in a sort of business.
In this capacity. Context. Yes. So in business, we're talking about injunctions in the business world. That's what we're talking about. So let's say, so we've understood commercial injunctions relating to the business world. Let's talk about what types of particular injunctions there are, the most common types in the business world. What would one look at applying for, under what sort of circumstances? Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, types of injunction really are infinitely variable. I mean, the jurisdiction to grant an injunction is very wide and flexible, especially when it's just and convenient to do so. But obviously, lawyers do categorize them because lawyers love categories. And there's a number of sort of broad categories. There's prohibitory versus mandatory. So prohibitory is an order for someone not to do something, and mandatory is an order requiring them to do something. So that's one way they're categorized.
That's very useful to know, actually. So to prohibit somebody from doing something, so stop doing something you're actually doing. A mandatory is don't do something that you might.
Mandatory is do something that we
want. Oh, sorry, yes. Do something that we want you to do. Exactly. Yes.
Exactly. And then other categories, we'll come on to, I think, talking about when you apply for injunctions, but then a final injunction and an interim injunction is a very important distinction. So a final injunction is an injunction that's granted after a full trial, and it's normally permanent, whereas sort of an interim injunction is one that's made before you have a trial to try and make sure that the status quo is sort of maintained until trial happens and doesn't make a trial largely pointless.
That's very interesting as well, isn't it, Duncan? Because interim injunctions perhaps may be overturned, or not overturned, but dismissed further down the line.
Exactly right. And it's something that you've got to think about very, very carefully. People often sort of, when something terrible happens, people dash into lawyers' offices and say, I want an injunction, I need an injunction. And actually, you know, the worst thing that can possibly happen is to get an injunction and then have it overturned further down the line, because that is a hugely expensive
exercise
to have on your plate. Not only have you spent lots of money to get an injunction that you've then lost, but you end up paying the costs of the other side too once it's overturned. So that can be very bad news indeed.
No, absolutely. So if we sort of look at the more basic side of which kinds of situation you can apply for an injunction. So say, for example, and I'm just going to use this as a loose example, you have a business partner or somebody that works for you that's carrying out an act in the business directly to do with the business. So say they're, I don't know, your business partner's decided to post lots of stuff about the company. You don't want that kind of information posted continually. And you're saying stop, it's affecting the business. So would it be the business that goes and gets the injunction against the individual as an entity, or would it be yourself getting the injunction against the individual? And I say this whether it's a business partner or whether it's an employee, perhaps, of the company.
I think it definitely depends on your business structure. If, as you said at the end, it is a company, then the general rule is it would be the company, because the company is, you know, a legal person.
Yes.
I'm sure you've probably discussed already in another podcast that will be the person whose business is being affected by your business partner. But if you're in a partnership, properly called, then one of the partners could seek the injunction, for example, and you're not completely prevented from bringing an injunction bring an application for an injunction yourself if the structure is a company structure, but it is more difficult. You have to do things like bring something like an unfair prejudice petition or a derivative action, which are more complicated company law things, which we can talk about if you like. But
that's podcast part two, Duncan.
Probably.
Yes, complex. No, I get it. And I'm going to expand that a little bit more, because in my mind, if I think, right, we're talking about a business partner who's an equal partner of a limited company, and I'm just taking this as an example, one example, yeah. And you want to stop the other business partner from doing something. So can you, as you're both equal owners of this business, so can the business take one of its directors, equal shareholders, to court to get an injunction against it if it's being led by the other director? Do you see where I'm coming from here?
Yeah,
you think you both own it.
Yeah, I mean that's one of the difficulties, really. So, a company certainly can sue its directors, and it can sue its shareholders. Although it's much more likely to be suing its directors, because it's directors that owe duties to the company, shareholders don't really. But the difficulty, as you say, is that a company is controlled by its directors and to a certain extent its shareholders. So if the directors or shareholders are doing something that's harmful to the company, who's gonna bring a claim on behalf of the company? It's a completely correct question to ask, and that's where you get into these complicated company law claims, like a derivative action, which I mentioned, which is basically where the court gives permission to a shareholder to bring a claim on behalf of the company.
Right.
Or an unfair prejudice petition, where one shareholder, it's normally almost exclusively a minority shareholder, brings a claim saying that the company is being run by the majority in a way which is unfairly prejudicial to my interests.
So if you're looking at a commercial injunction, and you're looking, you know, as we said at the very beginning of the podcast, as you rightly outlined, injunctions are normally applications that are made when, you know, urgently, most of the time, because you're saying, look, that needs to stop, that's damaging, you know, and an injunction is something that's awarded in a situation more than likely when something is damaging and it fits that box. So if you have to, I'm just taking again the example of two directors of a limited company, and if you have to apply for permission before you can apply for the injunction, I'm assuming what I'm saying, the court does allow for urgent applications prior.
That's quite right, yeah.
Yes.
So an interim injunction, which is an injunction that's been got before trial, as I said before, which is sort of aiming to hold the ring before trial, so that if something really harmful is happening, or at least one side says something really harmful is happening, you can stop that thing happening until it's all decided at trial. Because otherwise, you can imagine all sorts of situations, and one is the situation which you raised, where the harm, you know, it can take a year and a half to get to trial, and by then the company's been destroyed. You've got to do something quickly, and that's where an injunction really
comes. So all the tools around getting an injunction, i.e. if you are a director of a limited company and you need to apply for permission to be able to bring an injunction action against one of the partners of the firm, all the tools and all the applications around that are designed so that it can be done quickly
nature. Yeah, I mean, what you'd do is you'd apply for the interim injunction first, and then you'd do all the other steps, like getting permission from the court to bring the claim in the first place. I mean, you can even apply for an interim injunction before you've started your claim, because the courts understand that that things move very, very quickly.
Well, to be honest, Duncan, it might not even go to court to become an issue, a litigation matter. If you've got the injunction and the person that you're trying to stop, you know, from taking actions that are damaging and shouldn't be, they might think, oh God, this has all become very serious now. You may resolve it.
That's quite point. Right. Yeah, you may well. I mean, in which case, I mean, generally, if you get an interim injunction, you have to promise to the court that you're going to, or as we say, undertake to the court that you're going to start proceedings, because that's why you get your injunction. But equally, you know, once you've started your proceedings, there's nothing stopping, or you've got your injunction, there's nothing stopping you talking to the other side and resolving it consensually. And I'm sure getting into an injunction does very much focus people's minds on the problem.
Yeah,
I mean, the one thing I would say is it also has a propensity to, you know, it's a pretty nuclear weapon. So it does ramp up tensions pretty quickly.
It can agitate as well, can't it? But you said something quite key there. You said that if you get the injunction, then really what you're saying to the court is, I'm going to, with an interim injunction, or does this apply to any injunction, I'm undertaking to the court that I will start proceedings. Say if you want to get the injunction to stop what's going on, so that you don't issue but you try to resolve it via mediation, ADR, alternative dispute resolution, or some form. will the court then say, okay, I can see there is a problem here, I'll grant you your injunction whilst you try and look at other means of ways of just, you know, resolving this dispute? Is that something that can happen?
I'm afraid not, no. I mean, you need to...
Interesting.
It's a sort of unusual concession that the court makes in very, very urgent situations, that you can get an interim injunction before you even started proceedings. So if you do that, the court will say, right, well, we understand you haven't started proceedings yet because this really is an incredibly urgent situation. But we are going to require you to issue proceedings. It's often in the next couple of days, not even.
Right.
So you really need to start them. But then that said, once the proceedings are on foot, then there's all the procedural wriggle room that you'll have with any other case that would mean that you should have time, if both parties are willing, should have time to discuss things. But that again is another thing to bear in mind with, if you're looking at one of these interim injunctions, it accelerates things incredibly quickly. You don't have a normal sort of pre-action process where your solicitor write or or the company itself writes the person you're thinking of claiming about a night, a shirty letter saying, you are doing this, stop it. And then they write back and saying, well, actually, it's not quite as simple as that. And, you know, you have a bit of sparring war. I mean, that's all just blown out.
I love that. A sparring war. I can see the headline right now. Commercial injunctions, hard and fast. It's like the Grand Prix. Right?
Yeah, well, it is certainly, as I say, a nuclear option.
Yes, and I can imagine that your work, and I mean, I know that most barristers work hard and fast, but when with commercial injunctions, if somebody comes with you and with the level of, you know, your level of work that you do, quite complex areas of this law, you know, it's a lot of work very quickly, and you have to be sharp as the sharpest tool in the box to get it right.
But it certainly helps. It certainly helps to have done them before.
Yes. Oh, good God. Definitely helps to have done them before if you're going to act for someone that does them. Let's talk about, Duncan, what test will apply when the court is considering whether to grant an injunction. And again, obviously, it largely depends on every case is individual and unique. But let's talk about some of the common headlines that a court will apply in terms of considerations of whether to grant a commercial injunction or not.
Okay, well, here I think we need to split them into our final injunctions and our interim injunctions. So final injunction is one that's awarded after trial. And there it's quite simple, really. I mean, you need a legal right to enforce, which the court will have decided whether you do or don't have that after trial. And then it needs to be just and convenient to grant the injunction. As a general rule, that means that it's the sort of right that the breach of that right is not capable of being compensated by money. So normally a court likes to say, right, well, someone's breached this legal right, they need to give you some compensation for the losses you've incurred as a result of that breach. But some rights simply not capable of monetary compensation. I'm thinking trespass, for example, is a classic one.
Yes.
If someone's trespassing all over your land, you know, the losses you've suffered aren't monetary. You know, they haven't cost you any money a lot of the time, but they've walked all over your land. You know, they shouldn't be allowed to do that. So the court would grant an injunction to stop them from doing it.
Yes.
In the future, for example. So that would be final injunctions. Interim injunctions are more complicated because it's, as we discussed, it's before a trial's even taken place. So you don't know who's right and who's wrong between the parties. So the goal is to bring about a situation where while the parties are getting ready for trial, circumstances don't change so much or so much harm is done to make a trial essentially pointless. There's basically three things the courts will consider when you're looking at an interim injunction. The first is that the person seeking the injunction must show that there's, quote unquote, a serious question to be tried. So their claim has to have some...
Well, yeah, there's a lot that can come under that banner.
That's true. That's true. Yes. That's not to say, you know, it needs to have a certain monetary value or anything like that. That's not what it means. But what it does mean is that your claim has to have some prospects of success.
Yes.
If you don't have that, then obviously it stands to reason that you shouldn't get the injunction. So, I mean, you don't need to prove that you're going to win. You don't need to prove that. But you do need to prove that you've got some claim here. That has some prospects of success.
Because again, as we said earlier, the injunction has to be linked to a claim. It can't be linked to the fact that, oh, I'm going to go off judge and try to resolve this in ADR or mediation or any sort of settlement conversations. This is going straight into litigation, and here's my case for litigation. This is why the basis of what I'm coming to you for on the commercial injunction.
Exactly right. So that's our first consideration, whether you've got a serious question to be tried. And then the second thing the court will consider is like a final injunction, really. You'll need to show that damages wouldn't be an adequate remedy for you when it comes to trial. So you need to prove that this harm is going on and I can't be compensated from this harm by money when it comes to trial and looking at...
Now that's interesting, isn't it? Because say if you are trying to seek damages by way of financial, are you saying that if you are going down that road, then a commercial injunction may not be granted?
As a general rule, that's probably right. There are times where even though you're only seeking money, you might still look for an injunction. One of those might be that actually you don't think that the party you're going to be suing has any money to pay you. That might be possible. Or that although you might be seeking money, it will be very, very difficult to work out what, at the end of the day, after the trial's happened, it'll be very difficult to work out precisely what your losses are, and the court will never be able to compensate you adequately. Because it's just very, very difficult to calculate. I mean, I'm trying to think of an example and one doesn't immediately come to mind.
Because obviously I'm thinking, say if you have had financial losses and in litigation, you know, it's very common that you sue for financial losses. If you need to stop somebody doing something so that you have further financial losses during your litigation or just before you embark on your litigation, why, you know, you should be able to apply for a commercial injunction to stop that person creating more financial damage. That's my sort of thought process. That's where I'm going with it.
I can see that. The attitude the court will take, well, if that party at the end of the day is going to be able to compensate you for any of your losses, then...
Let the damages carry on. No.
Exactly.
Well, good God.
But of course, you know, for example, if in your the example you came up with at the beginning of the programme about shareholders or partners in a business fighting about how the business is run, there may be ways in which that can be compensated in damages, but if the harm is potentially so large that that business will go under before trial happens, then that might be a sort of situation where you would still be looking at an injunction, even though at the end of the day, the remedy you might be seeking would be damages.
And I think that's quite interesting because it could be looked upon that, say, you're seeking to start your litigation. It is a money claim through litigation. However, the other party very well could likely not have the funds to pay. And that's one of the criteria we're saying that a commercial injunction could be satisfied under. So you're saying, I want the commercial injunction because through my litigation, I will prove my case, hopefully in the courts, and get the court to award me the order that I want. But in the meantime, the other person won't be able to pay the end game, the damages at the end, and that's why I want the commercial injunction now. So in those circumstances, could be applied.
Yeah, that's one of the situations that you may be able to say that you're not going to be adequately compensated in damages at the end of the day, which is the sort of the second limb of the three limb test we're talking about. So we've got our serious question to be tried. We're not going to be adequately compensated in damages. And then finally, what the court will consider is what the case law calls and what lawyers will call the balance of convenience. but it's not really convenience they're talking about. It's the balance of justice, really. So what they'll do is, once they've considered those two first factors, they'll take into account all the other factors for and against the granting of an injunction, and they'll weigh them up and then come to a view.
Right.
There's all sorts of things that might be taken into account there, but it's really
very specific. It'll be very specific, obviously, to that case and what's applied. Well, exactly, you, right. Do you know, 25 minutes we've been recording for, and here's me sort of thinking, right, I want to talk about what are without notice the injunction is about, the advantages and disadvantages of seeking injunction, and we just don't have the time. So I'm going to draw you in.
All just carry on talking, and you'll never get a word in edgeways.
No, I'm quite the same, actually, I have to say, because I get so excited and passionate about what's being discussed. But I'm going to openly draw you into a part two, if you're up for it, Duncan, when we're ready to do part two.
I'd love to, yeah. Yes, please.
Because we haven't even scratched the surface on this really complex area of law, actually, because what we've done is we've sort of spoke about four areas of different questions, and each one has opened up another monstrosity. So, but yes, I think that's been very helpful as a basic introduction to commercial injunctions, and I think that in part two it will be very interesting to discuss the without notice injunctions, the advantages, disadvantages, what to do before a hearing, and all the other questions that I know we wanted to speak about today.
Sounds great. I'm up for it.
Good, you're on. And I will say thank you so much for your time today, Duncan. That's been really helpful and really informative, I have to say.
Thank you very much for having me.
Good. And what I will say to our listeners is, don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcast. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you very much for listening.